Right, I just wanted to get this bit recorded, just in case, Mum. But do you remember that this is your week to do the intro?
No.
Well, let's see how this goes then.
I'm Joe. My mum's name is Aileen, and you're listening to My Mum Missed Marvel. The Marvel Cinematic Universe is a collection of 23 films, which have grossed a combined total of over $22.5 billion at the box office alone. It's the largest film franchise of all time, and has been a big part of my life for the past 11 years. For my mum, not so much.
Hello, and welcome to My Mum Missed Marvel. Hello, Joe, how are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you, Mum?
I'm fine, thank you.
Really pushing the boat out for this intro that you had. You had 1 week. Just completely anything you fancied.
I know, completely forgot. You could have reminded me. You could have reminded me, but I suppose you thought it would be funny just to see how I'd forgotten. And
well, the thing is, I thought about reminding you, and then we spoke a little while ago, and you mentioned having listened to the podcast in which we agreed that you would do it. So I assumed you'd just remember.
And also, when I listened to it, I thought, oh, mental note. That's right. Yep. I'm supposed to be doing
So mental notes, not as good as real notes
not
on
as
paper,
good as real note. No, definitely not as
fair
good
enough
as real
you
note.
Also didn't say what the show was there, Mum. Do you want to go at that?
I said it was My Mum Missed Marvel. Do you mean I didn't say what episode it was?
So this is My Mum Missed Marvel, the podcast in which my mum and I watch every film in the MCU in order. That was what I was looking for. We're almost done. Had to take the reins back there for the last couple of minutes, Mum. That's got to be disappointing. Sorry about that.
No.
Well, let's see if we can salvage this episode with the remaining 50 minutes or however much more we have. So, Mum, we're at the end of the MCU now. This is the last film that's in the Infinity Saga. The MCU is continuing, but this is the last film in the whole big first chunk before they've kind of started things back up again with stuff on Disney Plus in recent months. We're going to watch Spider-Man Far From Home today.
Yes, we are. Not sure exactly how that's going to be. We did talk a little bit about it at the end of the last episode, so it is
a
bit
odd. Yeah, we mentioned
one
or two things.
After such a great big blockbuster that tied everything all up together and was very powerful and impactful, that we've now got this little, what you called it, palate cleanser.
Yeah, epilogue type thing.
Yeah.
It's an odd idea. I feel like it would have been stronger to end on Endgame, but I guess we can see whether we think that the film is just enjoyable in general.
Okay.
I
mean,
maybe we'll have to do two kind of semi-ratings for this, where we look at it as the epilogue of the MCU and as a film in its own right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see how it goes.
We shall. So, what I said last week, what we've heard so far, is that I had kind of mixed feelings about this film. I thought it was all right. I don't think it was as good as the first Spider-Man film. I'm not sure. I'd say this is probably in my lower half of MCU. Oh. It's definitely in the lower half, maybe like lower third or lower quarter even.
Oh, dear.
I think it's got some fun bits. It's also just got some odd stuff. And maybe my expectations were just way too high because it's a Spider-Man film. So maybe I just ruined it for myself.
You like Spider-Man so much. He's one of your favourite. Yeah.
How did you know that? I don't think that's... So, as I just mentioned, it's called Far From Home. Mm. You may be noticing a bit of a naming convention.
Homecoming,
happening.
Far From Home.
Yeah. So the naming convention for the Spider-Man films is that they have the word home in them, which a lot of people have pointed out is probably one of the dumbest things in the MCU. Just don't
no
really get it.
For no particular reason, yes.
No, not really. Neither of them are great titles, so I mean, they could have switched off them. But I mean, that's a pretty minor point in the grand scheme of things. Would you like to give us a little rundown on Spider-Man, where he's at, what he's been up to, any supporting characters you can remember, any plot threads you're looking forward to?
So we first met him in Civil War, where he was brought in by Iron Man. No, he wasn't.
Yes.
Iron Man was a kind of a mentor to him anyway. So
he was, yes.
Spider-Man was very much looked up to Tony Stark and was absolutely thrilled to be part of the Avengers.
Yeah, and it was very cute.
In Spider-Man Homecoming, it was a sort of, he was still an ordinary schoolboy, but wanting to be a superhero. And it was kind of switching between those two and his desire to be a fully fledged Avenger and do good for the world.
Which is generally a pretty big part of Spider-Man stories. The kind of double life between regular person, be it schoolboy or not, and superhero. Mm-hmm. Like, you minus the Avengers thing, and that's at the core of a lot of good Spider-Man stories, I think.
Yeah, so that's where he was. That's where he was in Homecoming. He was obviously all involved in the end game as well.
He was
in Infinity War. He was destroyed. He turned to dust, and then came back in Endgame.
That's one way to put it, I suppose. Yeah, sure.
But what I can remember from Homecoming, well, the villain was Tomb.
Tombs. I forgot his surname was Tombs. I still love that. That's brilliant.
Who actually, as it turned out, was the father of the girl he fancied at school.
Yeah.
Which was a wee twist in that film. I'm hoping his buddy will be there.
Ned?
Ned, yes.
Yep.
Because he was a good character.
Well, they showed Ned in the end Endgame. Yeah, they met back up in the school corridors.
So that's a nice little dynamic, the buddy dynamic going on there.
Mm-hmm.
The girlfriend won't be there, but at the end of Homecoming, he spoke to the other girl who'd been around called MJ.
Yes, they find out that her friends call her MJ. So you put that together yourself, I believe, right? You know who MJ is?
I do know who MJ is, Mary Jane.
Not that I don't trust you on this, Mum. I fully believe you. But who's MJ outside of just her name?
Who is she? What do you mean?
As in, what role does she play within Spider-Man lore? And
oh, she's Spider-Man's girlfriend.
Yes, well done. You do remember some bits from the films that we watched all the time.
I do remember. Of course, I remember. I remember from the Tobey Maguire ones.
Yes,
because Mary Jane was a good Mary Jane. The Mary Jane that was in the Tobey Maguire films, I liked her.
I think, and again, I haven't seen the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films in a while, so I'm not going to say what I feel about it, but I think people aren't the biggest fan of Kirsten Dunst in those films.
Well, I liked her.
Yeah, I think the idea is that in general she's meant to be a little bit more of like a go-getter, and she's kind of like a bit of a wet blanket in those films, or like she's just constantly getting kidnapped, or she's getting taken prisoner by the bad guys and stuff. And I think the idea is that she's meant to be like a little bit fierier, hence the red hair and all that and everything.
Right. So we'll see what this MJ's like then, whether she lives up to
the higher standard. We will. Assuming she's in it would be a pretty strange choice not to put her in it, but yes, assuming she's in it.
Yeah.
The other, I'd say, main supporting character was Aunt May.
Aunt May, who's young. Aye.
She is very young.
Far too young and far too beautiful.
Far too... Okay, sure.
To be Aunt May. Yeah, Aunt May's not supposed to be young and beautiful.
It sounds like you have a strong opinion on this, Mum. why can't Aunt May be recast into a younger actor?
Well, I suppose she could be, but... Anyway.
Changes the dynamic. I get what you're saying, yeah. I wouldn't have thought that would be the type of thing you had much of an opinion on, really.
Well, just because it's different to what you're used to, but what does that mean? That means nothing. Yeah, that should not be a reason for saying she shouldn't be young and beautiful.
Fair enough.
She, at the end of Homecoming, though, she walked there into the bedroom when Ned and Peter were there, and so she knows that he's Spider-Man is the main thing that came out at the end there.
How do you think that's going to go? What do you think the continuation of the Aunt May finding out storyline is going to be?
Well, as she's young and beautiful, and it might be another dynamic, maybe she's not too unhappy about it. Maybe she wants a bit of the action and she becomes a superhero as well.
Oh, right. Okay. You think she leans fully into this?
Yeah, could do.
She's on the hunt for radioactive spiders herself, Aunt May.
Yep.
Fantastic. Well, yeah.
Unless I was supposed to say, oh, well, she won't be very happy about it, and she'll be trying to tell him not to be doing it, blah, blah, blah.
You aren't supposed to say anything, Mum. Your genuine reactions and thoughts are what I'm looking for here.
I'm pretty rubbish normally. Stuff takes me by surprise, which is like, think about this for a minute, Aileen, and that would not have been a surprise.
Your Ant-Man prediction does still make me chuckle every now and then when you thought he was just going to be an ant. The other big main thing that this film has, the big weight that it has to bear, is that this is the first post-Endgame film. So the first post-good snap. So everyone comes back in this one.
Yeah.
Yes. So, it's got quite a lot to do with that. How do you think it's going to handle these types of things? What type of things are you expecting in the first Everyone Comes Back film?
Well, I wasn't even sure that we would see everybody. I thought this might have been just a kind of standalone type film. So
I'm not saying that like all of the other Avengers are in it, but I'm just saying that like half the world has come back.
Oh, I see. This is the first, right, so the setting. Okay, I get you now. Oh, right. Yes, I hadn't thought about that either. Yes, it is. So the world is kind of starting to repair itself after the 5 years of the bad snap. Yeah, so what kind of state is New York in?
I mean, you'd imagined it would be very difficult to deal with. Just a bunch of people arrive. People were probably living in their houses. They've got to re-house everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably a lot of stuff going on with that as well.
Yeah. Okay, I hadn't thought about that. I should have given that a wee bit more.
Well, you say that, Mum, but Endgame has a lot of stuff going on in it. And I think it's very reasonable to be mainly focused on the characters that we all know and love. Right. For the majority of the film. But yes, those are more plot threads which are to come. So, without further ado, this film, as I've mentioned, is called Far From Home. It's directed by John Watts, a guy that I don't know super well. The main thing that I'm excited about with this film is that this film has Jake Gyllenhaal in it. Thoughts on Jake Gyllenhaal, Mum? You gave me a look like you didn't know who that was.
I don't know. Who's Jake Gyllenhaal?
Jake Gyllenhaal is maybe my favourite actor. I think when people ask, or, you know, when that comes up in conversation, I generally go to Jake Gyllenhaal.
What's he been in?
He was in Nightcrawler and Donnie Darko, Brokeback Mountain and stuff. He was in Zodiac, which we saw together.
Ah, right. Jake Gyllenhaal. Okay. So he's the other one that isn't Heath Ledger in Brokeback Mountain?
Yes, that's him.
Okay.
And just, phenomenal. Okay. I just think he's great. Nocturnal Animals is a really good one that he's in. Right. Just, yeah, he can make films so much better by his inclusion in them, I think. So when I heard that Jake Gyllenhaal was in a Spider-Man film, you can see why my expectations may have been slightly too high. But that's all the introduction-y stuff that I think we need to do. Shall we jump on in, Mum? Anything else that you'd like to bring up first?
I'm just cross I hadn't thought of my introduction. What a dope.
Do we need to give you a third week?
I think you'll have to. I think you'll need to give me one more go.
Okay, slight spoilers for the announcement at the end of this podcast, but there may be more episodes coming.
So. Yeah!
There you go. Maybe Mum can have a go at that. Right. Before then, though, Mum, let's go and watch Spider-Man Far From Home, shall we?
Okie doke. See you on the other side.
See you on the other side.
Well, as we're coming near the end, you say goodbye and I say hello and welcome to My Mum, Miss Marvel, the podcast in which Mum and Joe.
This is the discussion. This isn't an
intro. All the films in the MCU in order, and at least one of us at any given point doesn't know what we're talking about. Hello, Joe.
Mum, this is midway through an episode. This is like 10 minutes in.
I know, but have you never heard of anything called an editing suite, Joe? You take that wee bit and you stick it right at the front.
I don't know, maybe if you'd cleared it with the editor before, we might have been able to, Mum, but that was just too right. I was like taking a breath. I was deciding what I was going to say.
I know you were. I waited until that point.
Well, I mean, at least, if nothing else, this is going to kind of level out the amount of times that I've tricked you and you've tricked me on the podcast, Mum. The shenanigans just don't stop on My Mum, Miss Marvel.
Hilarity ensued.
Hilarity does ensue here, Mum, but importantly, did hilarity and other good things ensue whilst watching Spider-Man Far From Home for you? What did you think?
Well, you know, I was prepared to like it. I was prepared, having listened to your general impressions, you know, which were kind of lowering my expectations, to still go, well, this is a lovely wee self-contained film.
Yep, yep.
And yep, I'm quite happy to go with it for that alone.
Self-contained it is not.
And it's also quite unsatisfactory, I think, was my overwhelming response.
I feel like it just, for some reason, doesn't really work. And I think there's a few things. I don't really know why they all add up in the way that they do, but I don't know. You just kind of finish it and you're like, oh, why did they make this? Yeah. Why didn't they just end at Endgame?
No, I know what you mean, because I was kind of writing down afterwards all the things that I felt were unsatisfactory or what helped to make it unsatisfactory. But if it had been a different film, you would have forgiven all those things. You would have made allowances and you would have said, okay, yeah, well, this maybe. Was a bit, you know, wasn't too strong, but, you know, I'll forgive it because overall, you know, it was a good experience. But
and it somehow, has Spider-Man in it.
And it has Spider-Man in it, absolutely. But somehow or other, you weren't even, or I certainly wasn't even feeling as generous as that at the end.
Yeah, no. It just, it doesn't all come together, does it?
It doesn't really. So I think before we go any further, you might as well have the verdict. Oh, and it didn't work. Why does it always do that? That's the wrong sound effect. Did you get that there?
Yeah, I did get it there, Mum. Very nice.
Sorry.
It's been a while. It's been a while since we've had that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bit of a sad note.
That is a bit of a sad note to end it on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I did come down, to be honest, I did come down slightly on the harsh side because I was aware that over the course of the last 23 films, very few have actually had the family fortunes.
Well, I'm sure that we'll talk about what doesn't work about the film as well as the few things that do work about the film. But just in case someone hasn't seen Spider-Man Far From Home in a while or at all, what happens in the film, Mum?
Okay. Well, our villain in this one is Quentin Beck, known as Mysterio.
Massive spoilers, Mum.
Who initially is presented as an ally and then actually is revealed as a villain. And in my innocence, because I didn't know Mysterio, it was a surprise to me. But I gather anybody who knows the comics knows that Mysterio is a villain.
Well, I mean, they did try and play it off as like a, oh, we're adding Mysterio, but he's on the good side. Like, okay. All of the trailers was just showing him as a hero. They weren't saying like, oh yeah, and when he turns, this is going to happen. Didn't show any scenes of him and Spider-Man fighting or anything. But I think most people were going in going, 90% he's just going to be a villain. 10% maybe they do something really interesting and he is actually a good guy. But yeah, it wasn't as massive a surprise to us as I think it may have been to you.
Yes, there was a bit of a reveal there.
Yeah.
So I think the film starts with S.H.I.E.L.D.'s Nick Fury and Maria Hill trying to recruit Beck. Oh, no, well, they do recruit Beck, stroke Mysterio, to fight a kind of amorphous enemy that seems to take on the form of different elements.
Yeah, Beck's fighting one and they find him. And then they kind of start working together,
Yeah. Meanwhile, Peter Parker is back at school with Ned and MJ and various other people.
Yeah.
And they go on a school trip to Europe. So there's quite a lot of nice shots in different European capitals, which are quite pleasant. Mm-hmm. But the plot revolves around S.H.I.E.L.D. trying to get Peter Parker to work with Beck to help defeat this elemental energy enemy.
Yeah, there's four elementals.
Oh, there's four, right, okay.
The way that they explain it is that Quentin Beck is from a different version of Earth, and he importantly calls the Earth that we've been on 616, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And people have been looking forward to multiverse stuff for a while. So everyone was ready to go, oh, great, the multiverse is getting involved in the MCU. But it turns out that that's not quite what's happening.
Right, okay. So that was another disappointment that I wasn't even aware of. But
a wee tiny bit.
So we see in Venice, and this is where Mysterio gets his name because, you know, the Italian television are reporting about this water element enemy that came up and there was a big fight that Beck was fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And Spider-Man helps out in a kind of minor way, tries to keep his schoolmates out of the action, out of danger.
Yeah, he's very much in a support role.
Yeah. But Fury then asks Peter Parker to go to Prague because for some reason they've worked out that that's where the next elemental thing is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But Peter doesn't want to go to Prague. He wants to go to Paris because he's got a big plan all set out that he's going to reveal to MJ his love for her at the top of the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
Oh, and was it Happy or was it Fury? I can't remember. One of the two of them gave Peter these AI glasses from Tony Stark.
I think it's Fury that gives it to Peter on a boat.
Right. Okay, so he's got access to Edith and various weapons, primarily these kind of drones, these weaponized drones.
Yeah, it's like essentially the key to Stark tech, I think, is the idea. Everything you need to be the next Iron Man, I think, is
so it's kind of like you would get if you were in an Iron Man suit. That's the idea, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's given these glasses. So Peter, anyway, decides he's not going to Prague. He's going to stick to his love plot. And so he gives Beck the glasses, thinking that this is what Tony intended him to do, give it to the next person who will be Iron Man. And he thinks at this point that Beck will be the next Iron Man.
Yeah, he has a bit. He's having a bit of a crisis. You know, it's the classic Spider-Man. He has the responsibility of being Spider-Man, but it stops good things from happening in his personal life and all that, which should be good.
Okay. Anyway, it's once he's handed over the glasses to Beck, that's when we discover that Beck is in fact a villain, and he's and he's teamed up with other disillusioned Stark Industries former staff.
Yeah, the guy from Iron Man 1, who Obadiah Stane shouts, "Tony Stark built this in a cave with a box of scraps." The guy that's being shouted at gets a cameo in this, which is brilliant.
And there are various other people there. I didn't recognise most of them, though. Were we supposed to recognise them? They were all just disillusioned former employees.
Yeah,
anyway.
I don't think you're meant to recognise most.
Okay. So Beck used to work for Tony Stark. Stark got rid of him because he was unstable or something.
Yes, and importantly, Beck made the photorealistic environment rendering thing that Tony was using for therapy at the beginning of Civil War.
Yeah, he's an illusionist. That was what it was, wasn't it? That so he uses projections and whatnot.
Yeah, sort of.
Sort of, is that not right? You're laughing at me now.
No, pretty much, yeah. I mean, Mysterio is an illusionist in the comics as well. This is just kind of like a different type of illusionist using drones and stuff for it.
Okay, so because Peter's turned down Fury about going to Prague, Fury gets the school trip diverted to Prague anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So they all end up out there, and there is a big fight with the fire element in Prague.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of destruction and everything. And after which, MJ tells Peter that she knows he's Spider-Man anyway. And they're standing in amongst all this kind of rubble, and they find this part of a drone.
Yep.
And what happens next?
So they realise that Beck is a bit of a bad dude.
So they made
a mistake there, given the glasses to
Beck.
Oh, given
the glasses.
Thanks,
that's right. So Peter then goes to tell Fury about it, or Fury comes to him.
Yep, he goes to tell Fury, I think.
And he ends up telling Fury who else knows about this. So he dobs all his best pals in it. And it turns out that it's not Fury at all. It's Mysterio because he's an illusionist.
I think he actually doesn't say who else knows it. He clocks that something's going on, then Mysterio does a bunch of illusion-y stuff and then makes it look like he's just been killed by Nick Fury, and then Peter gives it up. So he sees through the first layer of it.
Right. But he does. But Mysterio does know that his pals are aware of it. Doesn't he?
He knows after the whole illusion scene, because he illusions Nick Fury walking in, shooting Mysterio in the back, and then asking Peter who else knows about this when Peter's guard is down and he thinks that they've just beaten Mysterio.
That's right.
He tells them, and Mysterio reveals that it was still an illusion and Peter gets hit by a train.
That's right, yes. I'd forgotten that bit, actually. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, it's quite kind of
badly,
an odd bit.
Yeah, but he's quite badly damaged by it, but he survives, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Then they all end up in London for the final action scene, which is set all around Tower Bridge.
Yep. So Mysterio's plan here is that he wants to be one of the Avengers, essentially. He wants to be a hero, and he wants to be a very well-respected hero. And so they're orchestrating all of these attacks in order to make it look like Mysterio is a hero saving people and everything, and they go to do one big, huge one in London.
Right. Okay. Peter manages to kind of reveal that it's all just an illusion. You know, the drones are kind of taken out one by one.
Mm-hmm.
And in the kind of final scene, Beck gets killed by a wayward bullet, well, a wayward shot from one of the drones. And is actually killed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Peter manages to see through what's going on. He gets the glasses back. His spider sense comes back, which is another thing we can talk about later.
Yes, that's right, the tingle. And then Peter and MJ get together, the end.
Pretty much. In the final fight, the school kids were getting attacked by drones as well, so they had a little escapey thing, but nothing much really comes of it, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty much that's it. It kind of meanders about a bit, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm. I mean, well summed up. Your recaps are continuing to be high quality, Mum, but yeah. I just, you know, normally I'm listening to those with bated breath, really enjoying it and reliving the film and everything, and I think just listening to it back again made me remember a few more things that I didn't like about the film that I didn't actually have written down.
Well, my main problem with it, which I think I said to you right at the end, was why didn't S.H.I.E.L.D. send for some other superheroes if they knew that Beck was a threat? Why just Spidey there, who clearly wasn't in the mood anyway? He was still having this kind of crisis of what he wanted and was he good enough and all that.
Yeah.
And what else was going on in his life. So you wouldn't leave it just to him, would you?
So this film has two things which cover pretty big plot holes in like end credit scenes, but I don't think it's a particularly good way to cover those plot holes. It feels a little bit lazy. So they clearly didn't want the rest of the Avengers there because they wanted a Spider-Man film. But I mean, there's so many ways that you can do that. You just have the stakes be small and personal. That's what Spider-Man's all about. Yeah, he's the friendly neighborhood superhero. So, but they wanted big Avengers-level threat stuff, as Mysterio says, and then it starts going, yeah, they should really get someone else.
Aye.
The way that the film explains it is that if you're happy to get into end credits scenes...
Right, the two end credits scenes, aren't there? So the first one is the Daily Bugle Man on TV, where...
We can get to that one just afterwards if you'd like, seeing as that doesn't tie into this.
Okay, so the other one... Well, you see, I didn't even quite get that, why that was supposed to cover it. So the final end credits scene was... the revelation that Fury and Hill are actually Skrulls. They're the two Skrulls that we saw in whatever it was before.
So yeah, I think his name is Talos.
Right, it wasn't actually Nick Fury and Agent Hill anyway.
Yes.
So why was that covering that plot hole?
I don't really get the full extent of this. It might be because I think more Skrull stuff is planned in the future. It might be laying groundwork for stuff that I don't fully understand. What it seemed to be revealing was that for at least some of the MCU, an unspecified amount of time, Talos has been filling in for Nick Fury when Nick Fury wants a break or can't get there or something.
Okay.
People have pointed out that there's a scene, I think in Age of Ultron, when Nick Fury eats toast, which is cut diagonally, and in Captain Marvel... he tells Captain Marvel that he cannot eat toast, which is cut diagonally. It's like a weird quirk of his.
Right.
So the implication is that Talos was Nick Fury in Age of Ultron and potentially other times.
Okay.
The way that it works in this film, I think, is to try and explain why he didn't contact other Avengers, because they're saying that Talos didn't have their contact information or something. Bit rubbish, if that's what it's meant to be. I might be misreading that. But that's roughly how I took it, because as soon as these things are world-ending, the excuse that they give for not contacting Captain Marvel is don't invoke her name. They don't even give an excuse for why they don't contact her. Absolutely, they should get someone more than just Spider-Man and Mysterio, who's a guy that they've just met.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're probably right, that's then, why.
Because I couldn't work out, I had written down in my notes here, at the end credit scene, why were they there? I just didn't get why they were there. But yeah, that might be it, I guess, then, if they were trying to give an explanation.
Yeah, I don't know loads about Skrulls and how they work in the comics. There's the one that I've read, the one story arc that I've read is called Secret Invasion. And it's okay. I wasn't actually the biggest fan of that arc in general, but that's how I know them from.
Okay.
So I feel like they've announced that that might be happening at some point in the future. Maybe this is setting the scene for that. But my point is that there are a lot of Skrull storylines, I'm sure, and I don't know what any of them are. So I don't really know what they're doing with the Skrulls. I don't think it worked particularly well in this film.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, I don't know, maybe a little thing of like Nick Fury wasn't actually Nick Fury for a lot of the MCU is like what they wanted to end the MCU on, like a kind of... not really a bombshell,
teaser,
but like an interesting little thing that if you go back and rewatch it, you can try and find out. But I mean, I don't know. It's not really a twist that I'm super invested in. I also, I don't know why they keep on trying to take away cool stuff from Nick Fury. Like, Nick Fury was awesome in Age of Ultron. Why are they now saying that that wasn't Nick Fury? Like, stop making Nick Fury less cool. I mean, I know it doesn't make him less cool, but, like, I don't know. Like, what has he actually done then? Like, how much of it was Talos? How much was... Did he assemble the Avengers? I mean, I hope so, but I don't know.
Hands off Nick Fury, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, they were on thin ice with that eye misstep in Captain Marvel, which is
you know how I feel about that, but this is
just more like, how many of his achievements are they now going to say was actually Talos? Like, I don't really know what they're doing with Nick Fury at the moment. I thought it was funny to see him in holiday mode at the on the spaceship again. So he's in space at the moment, I guess, was the thing,
right,
rebuilding
the thing?
Shield
that's
or something.
True. That's true enough. Yeah. Okay. No. Yes. Anyway, so that was a big weakness, I think.
The main premise, that to get that back to your starting point there, the main premise of the film, that they can't get anyone other than Spider-Man, doesn't seem particularly strong. And although it's vaguely explained at the end, that doesn't change the fact that throughout the film you're going, this should really have other people involved in it.
Absolutely.
I think in most of the solo films, they've done a pretty decent job of explaining why the rest of the Avengers don't join in. Like, Iron Man 3, he's disconnected from the grid for most of it and has to be kind of like sneaking around places and rebuilding his suit and stuff.
Yeah.
Thor 2 happens completely in Asgard for the most part. And then Thor 3, they're like stranded on a different planet so no one else can get there. Like, they always seem to have some stuff going on to be like, and this is why the Avengers don't show up.
Yeah.
This one, it just, I don't know, for some reason, it's harder to buy.
Yeah,
because I think because they went for such a big scope when they could have just had it be a small thing and like have it like Homecoming. No one's believing Peter, or like maybe Peter isn't quite sure that he's on to something and so doesn't call them because he doesn't want to look like an idiot
And
then, you know, things spiral and before he has a time to call the Avengers, suddenly he's in the final fight and stuff.
Yeah. No, there could have been other ways, you're right. Talking about things you didn't buy, there was one other main thing I didn't buy.
Okay.
Which was Peter's lack of motivation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that Spidey would have ignored Fury's calls, you know?
Yeah,
Particularly with Happy, you know, priming him and prompting him and all that.
Ignoring those calls and also the glasses, the
and,
main sentimental thing and also practical thing that he's got from the person that is arguably the most important parent figure to this version of Peter Parker. I think Tom Holland has said that if this Peter Parker could bring back Tony Stark or Uncle Ben, he thinks that this Peter Parker would bring back Tony Stark, which is kind of sad to hear. But, I don't think his read on that is wrong.
But that was the bond that they'd built up. So the fact that he would just have ignored it just didn't sit right. Also,
I think
young love is powerful and all that, but it's not that powerful. I didn't buy that he would actually have sacrificed, you know, the opportunity or the call, the responsibility that he had to help save the world just in order to get the love scene in the Eiffel Tower. I didn't buy that either.
I think it's an odd one because, as I've said, this is a good plot point to have in a Spider-Man thing. The Spider-Man PS4 one, I remember doing this really well because there's a bit where in the very opening cutscene, there's something Spider-Man related happening and Peter Parker's there. And as he's just about to leave, an eviction notice comes out, like rent past due or something. And he looks at the rent past due thing and then he looks at like a web shooter or something and he makes the decision and he grabs the web shooter and he swings and he goes and stops Kingpin. But then later on, a few missions down the line, he gets evicted. And there's a mission where he has to go around looking for some of his possessions, which were put in the trash. And you've got to, like, go and check different dumpsters in different things. And it's, like, really just a nice... This is at the core of the character. And that's where the great responsibility comes in, because he always will make the right decision in the end because he feels that sense of responsibility. And I like the idea that they put it in this film, but his reason for not being Spider-Man isn't quite strong enough.
No, that's
like normally it's like his marriage with MJ is going to break down, or like, I don't know, Aunt May really needs help doing something and like he's worried about his relationship with her, or like he's going to lose his job at the science place that he works because he becomes a scientist most of the time. In this, it's just he comes across more like an annoying teen than I think he has at any point before.
Yeah. And it's not believable. It's just, it's not, I just don't buy it at all. You know, Peter being such a reluctant Spider-Man, given his, when you think about the previous kind of youthful exuberance and enthusiasm that he was showing.
Yeah, yeah. Desperate to be in the Avengers and all that.
Exactly. This just doesn't sit with that at all. Despite, you know, later doubts and all the rest of it, and was he ready and everything, it just didn't sit right.
Yeah, I also just, I don't know, his character arcs have kind of just been sort of all over the shop. Like, starting as desperate to be an Avenger, and then his lesson learned is that he wants to be friendly neighbourhood, which, I don't know, kind of, I didn't really see it that much. And then in Infinity War, he's straight into space and stuff. And then in this one, he's like now really wanting to be friendly neighbourhood. I guess it kind of has a through line, but I don't know. It's difficult to get a really strong idea of what this Peter Parker is about. Mm-hmm. I think because his motivations change quite a lot.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
you're always wondering, like, where is he in this balance between responsibility and just being a regular kid and all that? And it's just, I don't know. Yeah, I agree. Something about it just doesn't quite work. Mm-hmm. There's probably people that could put that into words better than we could, but not
Speak
sure
yourself.
About that. So to carry on from talking about his regular school life and everything, one side of that dynamic, one of the really sad things about this is that this has to follow up Endgame. Not just because Endgame was a massive climax and that this is a smaller scope film, sort of, but also because it had the big, heavy weight responsibility of being the first post-snap film.
Yeah.
Like, there weren't any films set in that 5 years, and this one was set just after everyone came back.
Yeah.
And we were talking about it in the intro. The effects of that on the world are crazy. And they do, like, a little bit at the beginning, where Aunt May's running a charity for people who were displaced by the snap. People were living in their houses and stuff. But in terms of personal connection to the story, it doesn't really affect anything. It's not there in the world. No one, like, there aren't any noticeable effects by it. Like, Venice looks like Venice, as it normally does, as do all of the other cities. But I think the thing that's more disappointing is every single character from Spider-Man Homecoming was snapped and is now back in the same year at school. And
Absolutely.
It's just, They have, like, one little guy who's like, he used to be in a younger year and now he's in our year. How crazy is that? But it's like, man, the dynamics between, like, Peter and Ned, Ned being 5 years older, or, like, I don't know, MJ gets snapped. That would have been a more difficult one to pull off. But, like, not even Flash got snapped. Like, every character is just exactly the same. And it's like they just wanted to ignore this massive thing that happened. This very much feels like it wants to be a small Spider-Man film, even though it relies so heavily on MCU stuff.
Yeah, it was a real weak point, I think, that it almost was as if they had just kind of decided to ignore it. We'll just ignore it. Well, no bother. It's a bit too difficult to kind of work anything in, you know, so we'll just ignore it.
To a Spider-Man film, maybe it would have been. I mean, I don't know, that something, like, even Aunt May, like, she looks the same age. Like, maybe they just didn't want to do people's makeup or something.
Yeah.
I think Happy is, like, the only character who didn't get snapped in the entire film.
Right.
I don't know, maybe the bad guys did, but it's not linked into their character arcs in any way.
And I mean, they don't even really discuss the effect of it or anything. You know, it doesn't work into the dialogue at all, really, apart from that kind of jokey thing you said about when young kid.
A couple of bits in the intro. Like, they talk about, you know, they do the funny little "I will remember you" thing at the beginning with the kids, and, like, they talk about the snaps and, like, but they talk about it in terms of, like, and now we have to do the year again, which I guess is relevant to kids, but, like, to go from such really big stuff to then, you can go from really big to really small and personal again, but it didn't really feel like they did that. They did a big world-ending type threat, or at least it seemed like it. And I don't know. It's just, in terms of a film to follow up Endgame, I don't think this was a particularly good choice for them to make.
No. And while we're on things I didn't like about it, I mean, the action scenes, I'm no connoisseur of action scenes, as you know, But they looked pretty naff to me as well. I don't remember kind of thinking, oh, I recognise that. It's a classic MCU action scene moment.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. I think the issue is, because of the plot and Mysterio trying to make it look like Mysterio is the only one that can handle these things and like, oh, look at me, I'm a good Avenger and all that, Spider-Man can't really interact with basically everything they fight. I mean, the water elemental, he whips his web in and it obviously doesn't do anything. Then there's the fire elemental, which he can't swing about and punch and stuff. So it's just Mysterio blasting magic lasers at it, but it's unclear of exactly what's going on there. I think you asked me at one point, what are his powers?
Yeah.
And then at the end, the only one that, you know, he's fighting the drones and everything. This is going to sound real weird. I don't know if I can suspend my disbelief for the drones. I think the drones are a bit too much. And I know that I'm saying this in a universe that has magic and gods and, you know, Iron Man's had crazy tech forever and all of this. But I just don't buy that these drones can make illusions which are so perfect and can't be discerned. It's just, I don't think I buy that. And then the scene when Peter's fighting them all, there are so many of them. So many of them have clear shots.
Yeah.
I kind of don't buy that he can dodge them all. Like, exactly. I know he's Spider-Man, but like, you're watching it like,
exactly,
this is insane. Like in the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, the first one where he fights Green Goblin, there's that great bit where he jumps into the burning house and then like the old lady turns around, it's actually Green Goblin, like he fires like shuriken things at Spider-Man and Spider-Man does like a flipping backflip type thing, but one of them cuts him and you're like, oh, I you know, I get a really good idea of what this Spider-Man is. This Spider-Man just sort of can do anything that he wants to, and it, I think, takes a little bit of the excitement from that final scene out. I just don't get why he doesn't get shot. There are so many drones.
But as I say, Joe, see, if it were a better film, you would have made an exception for that. You would have gone along with it, and you would have, you know.
I think I may
have. Ride.
Yes, yeah. And there are definitely things that they could have done that would have made me buy it more. The thing that I think clinches it for me is one of the coolest scenes in the film. I think the proper Mysterio illusion scene, where it's that bit that you were talking about where Peter was trying to talk to Nick Fury and stuff, and Mysterio is just doing crazy illusion stuff, and it's really cool. I actually quite liked looking at it. The thing is, I feel like most of the time that films have those crazy illusion vision type stuff going on, it's normally because like they've been dosed by a psychoactive drug or something, or like there's genuine magic involved, and I can buy those more than the drones. I just, as soon as those drones come in and then everything immediately becomes CGI and it's like he's in the hallway of the school or something, and it's just like, I really for some reason struggle to accept that the drones are doing that. And I know that's a stupid thing to say,
because they
do have ridiculous stuff, and Tony Stark was doing ridiculous stuff with technology, so it shouldn't bother me, and I completely acknowledge that. But I can't shake it when I watch this. I really can't shake it. I feel like that should have been a psychoactive drug scene or something if they were going to do a weird illusion vision type thing.
So, I mean, all in all, it was an anticlimax. And
it was.
I mean, and I'm not... Do you think they just badly misjudged it? Or is it not a good enough film in different ways? Or
I think it's a mix of stuff. Yeah. I think it's just placing it after Endgame was just not the right time to do this film. I think there's the problems with Spider-Man and how Spider-Man, again, feeds into that first problem, and also they focused on perhaps the wrong parts of Spider-Man, and you can't get a good idea of this Spider-Man potentially and what his motivations are sometimes. I mean, there are other things. I think it's the Iron Man villain. It's another bad guy who's wronged by Tony Stark,
and with
a team of bad guys that are wronged by Tony Stark, and everyone's saying
before.
To Peter Parker
that
and everyone's saying to Peter Parker, like, you're going to be the next Iron Man, you're Iron Man Jr., and it's like, is he? Why? He's Spider-Man.
He doesn't need to be
Iron Man Jr. His suit looks so much cooler when it's not the Iron Spider. Like,
absolutely.
It's just, it's the film is so heavily based on Tony Stark, and I'm absolutely fine with them doing the funny little memorial at the beginning. I think is good. I think Peter being sad about Tony and like that informing his character arc would be good. But like, every plot point, the bad guy is based on Tony. The glasses, which, are most of the driving force of the plot, are based on Tony.
Yeah.
When Spider-Man comes back and rallies, it's on Stark Industries jet, and he uses Tony's technology to make a new suit and everything. And it's just, there's that line, I don't think Tony would have done what he did unless he knew that you'd be here afterwards. And it's like, what, you think he wouldn't have saved the universe if Peter Parker had gotten killed? Like, I don't know. It's just, I am generally one of the guys that says the MCU didn't have too much Tony Stark. I'm mostly okay with the villains largely being linked to him. I can forgive that and stuff. This one might have gone a little bit too far on it, perhaps.
That might have been part of the misjudgment, though. Maybe they thought if we throw a lot of Tony Stark in, that'll kind of rescue it from, you know, the kind of anticipated disappointment of being the first film after Endgame. Maybe they thought that was the way to kind of ensure that it still had the stardust.
Yeah. Could have been. You know. Could have been. They might have been wanting it to be a bit of an epilogue.
Yeah, yeah.
So the MCU, as this was meant to be the little epilogue-y thing,
aye,
and they wanted it to mirror Iron Man a bit more with, like, Spider-Man making his Iron Man suit and, like, heavily based around Tony, but,
they were doing, it didn't work.
Yeah, and you mentioned there the perceived disappointment people might have had being the first post-Endgame film. I was really looking forward to the first post-Endgame film. I mean, you know, we've mentioned it over and over again. These films do things that I don't think most people would expect superhero films to do. I think they can get into more interesting stuff and really good character stuff and everything. Endgame is a great example of that, with the whole first act just being phenomenal characterization and people talking to each other, essentially. I was really looking forward to them doing like a, oh, look at these serious implications of not only the snap, but then the reverse snap. Like, let's delve into that. I'd be up for like a geopolitical type of film that's just entirely looking into those ramifications. Maybe doesn't even have a primary antagonist or something. And it's a very boilerplate superhero. This is like what people are expecting superhero films to be, I think.
It felt a bit like it was a commercial decision, and the commercial decision to release a film just overrode everything else.
It felt a bit like that, commercial.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, the rest of them are commercial as well, let's face it, you know, they're not making but these films again.
They've got a heart.
Absolutely, but this one just felt wrong. No.
Yeah, I agree. It just, it feels quite shallow. There's not much there below the surface. I'm kind of surprised we've been talking for this long about it. I guess their problems are quite interesting, but...
Shall we talk about the credit scene then? That's the burn bit we haven't done, the Daily Bugle.
I have one or two more things.
Okay, go.
I have one or two more bad things and then one or two more good things, because I think we should put in some things which are actually good about the film, because I do like certain stuff.
Well, okay,
what were you saying, sorry?
I'll let you lead in that. I haven't got everything down under the good things.
Just before we get to the good stuff, one last thing. Spider-Sense. What's happening with the Spider-Sense? Why do they make it plot points if they're being deliberately incredibly vague about it? He loses his Spider-Sense, gets it back. At some point, he just says to Mysterio, you can't trick me anymore. Why? Write it into the plot in the tiniest amount, right?
And it also really annoyed me that they were talking about the Peter Tingle or whatever they called it. And I know it was supposed to annoy Peter, but it was like, just enough already, you know?
Yeah, it's not a hilarious joke. I think I was fine with it if Spider-Sense itself had been good. But yeah, I don't know. They've been kind of ignoring it so far. But I mean, hints of like maybe it's there. But then the idea of like, do you have it back? Oh, I can't use it to see through these illusions. Now I can. It just, none of that really felt particularly earned. None of it was written in. It was just lines randomly. And then they ended up being really important, because the way he wins is through his spider sense. But the film in no way focuses on it beforehand. So it's just...
Agreed.
So that's my last thing. I think I have down here, don't like the glasses, but I think we've covered that. I just don't really like the glasses in general. I think they're a bad MacGuffin, and it's a bad thing that he gets from Iron Man, and I don't like how he interacts with them, and I don't like that he gives them away. The glasses are also not great. Things that I did like.
Hooray!
The chemistry between Peter Parker and MJ is great. I think those two actors are really, really fun together. I think they play off each other super well.
So you said at the time... It didn't stand out to me. I thought they were okay, and I thought there were some some quite good scenes. And I know it was sweet and all that, you know, young love was quite sweet. But I didn't think it was particularly sweet or particularly well done.
I don't think it's the best written part of the film. And the plot points built around that aren't always the strongest. Mm. But just when it's a conversation between the two of them, I like it. I think that the way that they deliver and receive lines from each other and their little facial expressions and stuff, I just feel like they've got a good rhythm. I like seeing that Peter Parker and MJ on screen together. I enjoy that section of the film.
Okay, I'll give you that. I like
the idea also of it focusing on the romantic bit there, but having it from the lens of their young kids. I just don't think that was worked particularly well into the film. The other thing, which I kind of foreshadowed a bit before the break, Jake Gyllenhaal is great in this. I thoroughly love Jake Gyllenhaal. Every film I've seen him in, Jake Gyllenhaal is fantastic. He's just, I like him at the beginning, and then when they reveal that he's a megalomaniac or whatever and he's wronged by Iron Man and all that, he's having so much fun in the role. He just every scene with Jake Gyllenhaal in it, that guy gives a great performance.
He's definitely got a presence. No, I'll give you that.
I mean, it's a bit of a shame that he's not a hero. I would have really liked Jake Gyllenhaal to be a recurring character in the MCU, just because I think he's so great.
Yeah.
But
you need,
I'll take it.
Need a strong character to be the villain as well. Yeah.
I mean, he could have been Loki, though. He absolutely could have been Loki.
He could have been Loki, you're right.
He plays a character called Loki in Zodiac as well. He's got all the qualifications you need.
Do you know what? I think he would have been a better Loki than Tom Hiddleston as well. As I like Tom Hiddleston, and I know people
Bold
love...
words.
I don't, yeah.
This is a fan favourite, Mum.
I know, but I never really bought that. I just somehow or other... Tom Hiddleston and Loki don't go together in my head, so I recognise that's my problem. But I can see how Jake Gyllenhaal would have been a good Loki.
He's got that kind of like, he can do a creepy smile if he needs to, but he isn't over-reliant on it. Yeah.
His facial expressions are brilliant, actually. He's very expressive.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, have you seen Nightcrawler?
No, I haven't.
Not Marvel-related Nightcrawler, but the film about people that drive around and film breaking news, like accidents and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. No, is it worth watching?
He's a Nightcrawler. What a film. I think it's been said to be the most realistic portrayal of a sociopath ever put to film. He just absolutely smashes it. Yeah, I'd thoroughly recommend that.
Thank you.
Maybe if the podcast branches out wildly.
Yeah.
So, you were going to say, the end credits scene, the second one.
It was the first one.
Yes.
It's where the Daily Bugle is on TV and it reveals, basically, Spider-Man has been framed as the villain, as one thing.
Just before we get into what they actually reveal in the Daily Bugle thing, do you remember who it was that was on the screen?
No.
So this is one of the things that is just the best part of the film, potentially.
Which passed me by.
It's J.K. Simmons. It's the guy that played J. Jonah Jameson in the old Spider-Man films. And he's just so good as J. Jonah. He's just amazing as J. Jonah Jameson.
So they couldn't
just
have cast
perfect casting.
They couldn't have cast anybody else in that part.
Yeah, and you know... Because he's a teenager and he doesn't work for the Daily Bugle, J. Jonah has been missing from this version of Spider-Man, and just jamming him in there as like a kind of, he totally believes Mysterio. That was great. He plays the role so well.
This is clearly working on lots of different levels, Joe, and that one was one that I didn't get.
Yep, fair enough. Yes, he reveals something. What does he reveal?
He's Spider-Man's identity.
What a twist.
Yeah.
I mean, cool moment. Mm. If this film were stronger, I'd be very excited to see where they're going with this in the future. As it wasn't, and I know that they can misstep with Spider-Man, it makes me a little bit more worried.
Okay.
Because that's quite a core part of Peter Parker's character, the double life. You know, if everyone knows that the reason he couldn't make the job interview was because he was Spider-Man saving the city, they probably wouldn't mind that he missed the job interview, and you kind of lose that fun dynamic a bit, but who knows where they go with that in the future. In the way that the other end credit scene did, though, this, I think, also is meant to be a little plaster over a problem that the film has, which is, man, Spider-Man is everywhere Peter Parker is, eh? Like, it was in the first one in Washington, D.C., which was already like, okay, film, you're pushing the boundaries of how much people will believe. But then he's in Prague. I know they do the Night Monkey stuff, but I think the idea is people would have left this film going, how does anybody not put this together? And so they were like, well, at the end of the film, we'll just reveal his identity, and then all of those complaints don't matter anymore because now it's revealed and it doesn't really matter. But it, again, it's more of a it's a bit of a lazy fix on that, I think. It's if you're doing Spider-Man, don't have him traveling around Europe. He's trying to hide his identity. Yeah. It's just, What did you think of the reveal? Sorry, I just went off on a big tangent there.
Yes, it seemed strange to me because although I don't know the comics, I do know that a lot of it depends upon people not knowing who he is. So, are they going somewhere with it? Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
We shall see.
Yeah.
Actually, it just reminded me, though, of the fact that he is so New York-based. We did get some Spider-Man swinging through the streets of New York in this
one. We did. The Final Swing, I think it's called. Don't know if that's an official name or a fan name or something, but a guy on YouTube whose video essays I watch calls it the Final Swing, and he talks about how Homecoming doesn't really have one.
No, it doesn't, which we mentioned in the podcast at the time.
Yes.
So that was,
but
that
like
was quite
every
confusing.
Other Spider-Man film has a last scene or second to last scene where Spider-Man swings through skyscrapers, which is,
Which is quite cool.
I mean, at a certain point, you can't not enjoy that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd watch 90 minutes of that.
no
action in between. If he does enough flips, if he does a flip every couple of minutes, I think I would, Mom.
Oh, God, get a life, boy.
Mom, you've just watched 22 Marvel films. You can't be telling me to get a life. You watched some of them twice, Mom. You're thoroughly in this boat with me now.
Yes, but not so much in the action scenes.
Yeah, very true, very true. That actually leads us very well into the talking about what's happening in the future of the podcast and things that we haven't really spoken about too much. So
what's next?
Yeah, that was the MCU, essentially. Mm. It's continuing on now in various forms and stuff, but that was the main chunk, the main films and everything.
That was what I signed up
saga.
For. That's
what you signed up for.
So I've completed my contract. I've fulfilled my contract.
Your soul is now free. It can move on to the afterlife.
Strangely enough, Joe, completed as we are sort of within 2 days of the anniversary of the lockdown, because this was a lockdown project.
So it was.
It has actually.
There you go. We got it done in a year. We might have had a few delays, but we kept to the year timeline, which I'm just going to canonise now as what we set as the goal. So
that's right. It wasn't
job
a weekly
done.
Podcast.
Blinding
no,
success.
Who said that?
So in terms of immediate, what's coming next, next episode we are going to be doing a kind of recap, talking about the experience type of thing.
Yep.
We might have a little bit of I don't know how much you like lists and quantifying things, maybe a top five or something, or just like five films that you think are some of the best, some of the films that you think might be the worst, best performances, plot lines that you really liked, characters that you'd like to see more of, just generally talking about that and what it's been like doing a podcast.
Yeah.
And then... Yep.
Can we get some of our massive fans out there to suggest what categories might be worth including?
There you go. That's a fun little bit of participation you can get involved with if you'd like to, and we'll tell you those ways that you can get in contact in a moment. I believe we're also going to have a bit of a Marvel quiz delivered by Luke, my good mate.
Yeah.
So good we'll run. See how much you've retained
oh,
from
no.
this.
I'll need to go and watch them all again.
Yeah, you can't quite purge it yet, Mum. We've got a little bit more to do. I'm kind of worried about it. If I then get all of them wrong, or if you get more, I just lose my status on the show.
You lost your credibility completely.
So that's what we're doing next week. And then the week afterwards, I think all we'll say is that we have one more surprise mysterious film. Which we won't get into now, but you can start theorising as to which film it is that we're planning to watch after that.
Okay.
And in terms of the proper future, I think we'll get into that more next week. And just for the time being, don't expect fortnightly episodes. I mean, it's not been the most regular upload schedule. Expect the upload schedule to be a lot less regular going forwards after the next few episodes, I think.
But... what is worth saying is that we are planning to continue in some form.
In some form. You'll just have to wait and see what that form is.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Right. Well, if you have anything that you'd like to get in contact with the show about, or if you would like to give us one of those ideas as to what we should talk about on next week's summing up episode, you can get in contact with us by emailing us at mymummissedmarvel@gmail.com.
Or following us on Twitter at mummissedmarvel.
You can slam down a Facebook comment and a like and a share button on Facebook.
Or you can go over to Instagram where there are still some nice wee pictures.
Yeah, where it's really popping off.
Yeah.
where the cool fans go to Instagram. you think that there's too much My Mum Missed Marvel content, this pace too breakneck for you, just head on down to Instagram where we live a real nice slow-paced life.
Absolutely. It's not even up to date at the moment.
Well, Mum, it was your episode. You did two introductions to the episodes. Yep. Would you like to take us out?
No.
Okay, end of episode, I suppose. Oh, yes.
You can't have me thinking about an intro and then also think of a catchphrase as well.
It's completely understandable. Be happy with that, listeners. You're not getting an outro this week.
The outro could just be a run through all our outros, which started off with, "You must be bloody joking," and then went through, "Good job, Joe."
Yep, and good job, Mum. Alec was a good guest, wasn't he?
Alec was a good guest, wasn't he?
Better late than never.
MCU later.
Looks like we're in the end game now.
Yeah, I think that's about it.
What was Ross's one? Ah, sorry, Ross.
I think it was just, come down to the Happy Marrow and get all your Christmas stuff.
Very good. We've covered all bases. Well done, Mum.
You have been listening to My Mum Missed Marvel, created by and starring Joe Walker and Aileen Walker, edited by Joe Walker, music by Kevin Chute, and graphics by Alex Carby. Okay, Joe, so, see.
I was about to press the end recording button. What are you doing?
I'm not, no. Press the end. For God's sake, press the end.